Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Wednesday, brought to you by Metro Rooter. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. Kicking off, Jags on the field right now, stretching it out, getting ready for their second consecutive OTA practice, as they'll continue on tomorrow as well and for the better part of the next few weeks. I'm back, Tony, 4 days off. That's a long time.
It is.
That's a nice little break in the middle of, I guess, the end of May. But
yeah, it reminded me. I know we get a bunch of time off around Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. We get some days off in there. But I haven't taken a day off where the station was on since last April. And the 3 day the 3 day weekend, I was like, man, I need just 3 or 4 days away sometime soon. So maybe next month.
It is the grueling 2 hour workday that people just don't understand the stress that these 2 hours place on us. And so it's good to recharge your batteries, decompress, whatever term you want to throw on it. But it does seem like you don't want to be away too long, right? I mean, this is kind of a medium where you don't want to lose your fastball. You want to be in the groove, so to speak. So I missed it yesterday with you. I did play a little golf yesterday, and because the only question everyone wants to know is, what did I do on 17? Not that they want to know, but I made a birdie. Thank you very much. I did make a birdie. Hit it inside 2 feet on 17. So that should tell you what course I played. I guess it could be any course that has a par 3 17th hole, but it wasn't any course yesterday. I thought of the cat out there. And I think I may have even been able to put it inside him hitting driver from his knees yesterday with my fine shot on the island green. But I will not belabor that. Chris Clemens not at OTAs yesterday. I don't want to belabor that, but it's interesting already. The reaction, fan feedback question of the day, Tony, is does it bother you that Chris Clemens is a no-show for OTAs? Clearly it bothered Gus Bradley. I'm not trying to put words into Gus's mouth, but that's my characterization of Gus Bradley's comments about Chris Clemens not being here yesterday, that he would have greatly preferred 100% participation. What NFL coach would prefer 100% participation, Tony? But I guess I'm struck already by the feedback being so pro on the side of it doesn't bother anybody. And some people are even saying, why are you asking this question? Well, because I understand the nature of some football fans, that it's that mentality of, you got to be all in. You got to love the game. You got to be out there. You're making millions of dollars. We've got, well, you know what else they've got, Tony? And we point to, you and I point to it all the time, the collective bargaining agreement.
That's right.
How many times have you heard us say, I ask rhetorically, that players shouldn't complain about the franchise tag? Because if they really hated it that badly, they had the right to not go back to work until that was taken out of the new collective bargaining agreement, if that was such a position that they're willing to take a stand on. The role of Roger Goodell as administrator of punishment and also the overseer of appeals on that punishment. The fact is, Tony, both of those circumstances, you've got the franchise tag and guys going before Roger Goodell for some kind of punishment, affect what, 1%? Less than 1% maybe of the guys in the league, right?
Which is why they're not fighting it as hard as a lot of people think they should.
It's not a rank-and-file issue for those guys. And here is something they have collectively bargained, these players. A reduction in contact, right? A reduction in practice time, reduction in mandatory practice time. Now, we live in the real world. We're not foolish to think that a young player trying to impress, let's say Bernard Pierce, right? He's got no track record with this coaching staff, with his football team. He gets picked up because he had a DUI and got released in Baltimore. Even if it wasn't for the DUI, let's just say he just got cut and got picked up. That's the kind of guy who really can't afford to skip OTAs. He can skip them, and I wouldn't hold it against them, but if you're trying to show a coaching staff what you're capable of doing, you've got to take advantage of your opportunities to do that. Chris Clemens is 33 years old. To my knowledge, he's never been a guy who's throughout his career shown up out of shape for anything. Pretty productive last year, and people can nitpick that. Oh, he had 3 sacks in 1 game. Okay, well, that sometimes happens that way, you know, when you have an 8-sack season or a 10-sack season or whatever the case may be for a lot of players. He had 8 last year. And so being that it's voluntary, being that they know what they're going to get out of the guy, and being that you got to be in a position that where you're willing to lose it all, right? Chris Clemens is scheduled to make, with incentives, around $3.5 million this year if he hits all his bonuses and all that stuff.
I thought it was four.
Is it four? All right, we'll call it four.
I think it's like $2.75 million basically as a base salary. I think he's got $1 million roster bonus.
Which, is it $1 million this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it is.
All right, so we'll call it four.
And then
a
workout bonus, which, yeah.
Right. Well, he's not, clearly, right. It doesn't seem like he's going to get, that's a minimal.
Like, it was like $25,000.
I think it
something.
Is $25,000. Yeah. I think it's like $2.975 million actually in base salary. But it's, all right, we'll call it $4 million bucks. He's made a bunch. He made probably that last year, right? He's made a bunch of money. You can never have enough money. But if you are confident in your position on the team, you're willing to run the risk that your absence might create opportunities for younger players to maybe shine at a less expensive price or whatever, just be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to roll the dice, you're not going to hear us, at least me, and I think the same goes for you. I'm not going to bash Chris Clemens over this. This is his decision, how he gets ready. I don't think anybody questions whether he gives full effort when he is here, and when he is here is when he's required to be here, you know, and Gus seemed to think yesterday that he'll probably miss the rest of this week. We'll see beyond that. Maybe he'll be in for some of the OTAs. Maybe he won't. But personally, you know, from a cohesiveness standpoint, sure, you'd like all your guys to be out there. But I understand why he opts to go this way.
Yeah, it doesn't really bother me that Chris Clemens wasn't here. I can understand, like you were talking about with the CBA and all these things we talk about with franchise tags and all the complaints about Roger Goodell being the guy who oversees not only the punishment but the appeal of these punishments and the players, not the association, not doing anything to get that off the table. They just complain about it every time it comes up that this is unfair. Well, bargain it out. And so in a league where it feels like the owners and the league itself have virtually all the power.
Everything.
In almost every situation, when a player, where they actually have won something, right, where they have won the right that they're not out there in pads today, they're just out there running around in shorts and helmets, which they should be at this time of year, that they're not in pads all year long in practice, that they've gotten those things reduced, and that you've gotten the OTAs to be a voluntary thing where players report if they want to report for this time of year, when they exercise those rights, because I don't think they have many. As players in the National Football League, no, I don't hold it against them, especially guys that have been playing in the league 10 to 15 years that decide they don't want to go out there in the middle of May in the heat and put themselves through that at this time of year. They feel like they can get themselves ready another way. Chris Clemens did the same thing last year, and he was fine. When he got here, he was fine. And so for a veteran like that that did show up and he played fine for the team last year doing the exact same thing, I don't begrudge him at all.
Well, we understand the nature of the sport. There's a lot of peer pressure that goes into this. You're never going to see a team en masse to say we're not going to show up, right? Because there are guys that genuinely want to be here, right, to take advantage of the extra practice time.
Absolutely.
And the opportunity. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm not going to fault a guy or 10 guys if they decided to not show up for OTAs, as is their right. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may. Like you say, you know, you take enough days off, Fat Tony fills in for you, they don't want you back around here.
Well,
so,
and it's one of those things where with a guy like Clemens, I think he understands what his position is, especially with Fowler being hurt. You know, what? There was a lot more risk for Chris Clemens 3 weeks ago than there is now.
Do you think he would have shown up?
No.
I don't either.
I think that Chris Clemens is this guy. Like, he made this decision. This is part of his offseason. He doesn't do this. Now, he may show up for some point with the OTAs. He'll be here for the mandatory minicamp in June. He'll be here for that because he's supposed to be here for that. But he's not going to show up for stuff like this. It's just not who he is. He didn't do it in Seattle. He's certainly not doing it here.
I was talking with John Osier. He's going to join us coming up here in about 8 minutes or so. And he said when he was in Indianapolis covering the Colts that guys like Edgerrin James, Reggie Wayne, they never showed up for OTAs. And it was just understood they weren't going to come. A lot of the guys who train in Miami or went to the University of Miami liked what they were doing down there to prepare themselves. They always were ready for the season. And it never, it never had any impact on their play. And B, it wasn't that big a deal. It was a, you know, slightly different time.
We had the same thing with Mojo. He was ready. When Maurice would get here, he was ready to play football every time that he came to Jacksonville. So it wasn't that big a deal. Now, Clemens is in a bit of a different situation it's not like it's Ryan Davis not showing up, right, who has an opportunity to maybe expand his role with this team and decides to work out somewhere else. This is Chris Clemens, who could get pushed by Andre Branch and Ryan Davis this year for playing time, right? So there is a little bit of a different situation than it is with a guy like Edgerrin James and Reggie Wayne, who, whenever they show up, that's the man. At their position, that's the man.
Granted.
They don't have to worry about it. But this is – that's his personality. It's who Chris Clemens is. He's working out on his own, and we'll see what he looks like when he gets here. He's certainly not going to lose an opportunity because he's not here at the end of May.
I will say this. Maybe Chris Clemens will be on this team. Maybe he won't this year. I think it's likely that he will, at least more likely than not that he will. I don't think it was a foregone conclusion that he wouldn't be here even if Dante Fowler Jr. hadn't gotten hurt.
Me either.
Right? So from that standpoint, I think Chris Clemens can help this football team. So the one reaction that kind of puzzles me, and I think people go a little to the extreme sometimes, not that I don't recognize that in myself, but is that, oh, what's big deal? Chris Clemens, he's some 33-year-old pass rusher. We've got these other guys. Well, you do have these other guys. Chris Clemens still had 8 sacks last year. There's a reason he was playing in front of these other guys, and I don't think it was out of the goodness of Gus Bradley's heart. They thought he was the most effective guy that they had. Will he be this year? Time will tell. But I don't think he's just – I don't think you're so strong all of a sudden at pass rush after one good season of a sack total that you just discard a guy or write him off because he's, you know, a little long in the tooth and he only had 8 sacks last year.
Certainly not.
I don't think they've risen to that level yet, Tony, where they can look down their noses at 8 sack seasons here in Jacksonville.
No, you certainly can't do that. And look, Clemens was an effective player for them last year. I'm not saying he was great, but he was an effective player for them last year. Andre Branch was hurt, so he's going into a contract year. What's he going to look like coming into this thing? And Ryan Davis is a guy that we've talked about a lot over the last couple weeks because of in the role that they asked him to play, he excelled. And is it time to see that role expand, especially with the snaps that Dante Fowler Jr. would have gotten not being there for Dante Fowler Jr.? So who's taking those snaps? Ryan Davis, again, a guy who excelled when given the opportunity. Is it time to see him on the field a little bit more? And the good news coming out of, you know, the first day of OTAs yesterday with that defensive line, Coach Bradley saying that Cindric Marks is ahead of schedule, whatever that means, in his ACL recovery. That still doesn't – we don't know what the timetable was in their minds anyway for his complete recovery. And that Roy Miller is at least out there doing individual stuff. He's not going to do any team stuff yet, but that he's healthy enough to be out there on the field participating to some degree, which is all really good news for that Jaguars along that defensive front. A healthy Cindric Marks makes a huge difference for them in 2015.
A lot of Jags talking after practice yesterday, which is a good thing because that's about the only thing we can talk about is what they said about what they saw out there yesterday. Because you can't report about what you see in OTAs. Not that we can see anything inside the studio, but nonetheless, John Osier will come in from OTA practice in a minute and tell us what he's not allowed to tell us coming up here shortly. So we'll take a look at OTAs with Johnny O. from Jaguars.com. Also today, Derek Schultz, WNDE in Indianapolis, stops by to talk Colts football as we take a look at the AFC South this week and what they've done this offseason to improve themselves as the all chase the AFC South title with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Also, later on this morning, if timing works out right when practice wraps up, Jaguars 6th-round draft pick out of Ohio State, Michael Bennett, scheduled to join us in studio this morning as well. So a lot to get to today. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Glad you're along with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt along as well. John Osier from Jaguars.com coming up momentarily right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter brings you Jaguars Today every Wednesday, live at Everbank. Wednesday. For some reason, it feels like Monday, Tony. Short week.
It's going to be a short week.
It's going to be a glorious week. Johnny O is here. That makes it a glorious day.
Dempsey got caught in traffic again.
I did not. I got caught on the golf course yesterday. That was the driving I was doing yesterday.
I hear you.
Not in traffic. Sir, I'll freely admit that. Johnny O, Jaguars.com live. Big to-do today, right?
Yeah, I guess it is.
12:15.
I'm on it.
It'll be live.
It's big.
It'll involve yourself and J.P. Shadrick,
right,
and all the fine camera crew that goes into all that stuff.
Good bunch of guys.
Guests today?
Not sure. No, Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles is a good guest
right,
to have.
It's a big moment for him.
It is, and once you have him on, then we no longer ever need to have him on the radio show.
No, never.
So he's done.
He's excited about it. We talked this morning. He's got some nerves.
Think.
But I said, hey, relax, kid.
Like, this is your second year, man.
Yeah.
You've probably done Jaguars.com Live once or twice before.
Yeah, he said he did some prep last night, so we're good to go.
Totally understandable.
Right.
I get that. We started the show asking, and a lot of people on Twitter, I guess maybe I'm just surprised it's such a near unanimous reaction that people aren't upset about Chris Clemens. I'm not.
Right.
I don't think you are. Tony's not. But knowing the nature of fandom in the past and just having done a lot of sports talk radio in an NFL town, there are plenty of times, Maurice Jones-Drew's not a leader. Maurice Jones-Drew's not this. Maurice Jones-Drew, you know. So there was some of that backlash. I don't know, maybe people don't have that connection to Chris Clemens
right.
as much, whatever the case may be. Maybe they know he's followed this pattern throughout his career quite a bit. What are your thoughts?
Well, it does strike me a little bit, too. I hadn't really followed much of the fallout, if there was any fallout on Twitter. But I'm not being here. I guess that's not too surprising. I don't think people in Jacksonville, realistically, who follow the team, think that Clemens is going to be a leader on the team at any point in his career. He's perceived as a guy, probably correctly so, who'll be here for a couple of years, maybe a year longer than that. But he's not a long-term guy.
Calling him a mercenary.
Yeah, he's not going to be a guy who's establishing the tone. He's here to get sacks. He got 8 last year. That his MO, you know, I think people, if he got that many this year, would be, hey, you know, not bad. 16 in 2 years for a guy you signed. So I don't think there's that connection with him as a face of the franchise type guy who other players are going to look to. I don't think he has any interest in being that. It's not a big deal. So I would think that's probably why there's not more fallout. And I guess that's why I'm not that worried about it. I don't think anybody really is. It's, you know, if he were here, it'd be fine. If he's not here and it hurts him, I don't think it'll hurt him not being here. If his production falls off next year, I don't think it'll be because of OTAs. I think that's generally the perception with the defensive end who holds – not hold out. I mean, I would say it's got nothing to do with that. But he's not here for the offseason. It's just not a big deal unless they're a team leader or a face of the franchise type guy, which I don't think Chris is.
Right, and as Tony
and
said, you have to be in a position where either A, you have the roster security or the financial security to say, hey, I'll roll the dice, and you know this
and
is the way I prepare.
He's been preparing this way for years. I think Sindarik said it the same way. Sindarik Mark said it best yesterday when he was asked about it. He was like, "Nah, that's Clem." I mean, essentially, that's Clem. He prepares this way. He's been doing it this way a long time. There wasn't an expectation that he would be here. Maybe last year when they were trying to get to know the guy when he didn't know teammates. All of his teammates know who he is. They know how he's going to be. They know his approach to things. So they're not that worried about him not being here. They know what he's going to bring. And if he's not the same player he was last year, I would guess that's more because of age or other circumstances than it would be 4 weeks or 3 weeks, because I imagine he'll be here for mandatory minicamp. 3 weeks lost in the offseason, fine.
You look at that position right now, and obviously Dante Fowler Jr. Not going to play this year, so the Leo position will be seemingly shared by Chris Clemens, Andre Branch, Ryan Davis. Andre Branch going into the final year of his rookie deal. So clearly I think they've seen some things from Andre Branch. I think the coaching staff likes him more than, you know, some other people do. And that's a pretty good group to have like you is the coaching staff. I think he did progress last year. Consistency of effort got better.
Certainly, 2 years ago, that was the big theme. Probably didn't have much time to show as much of that last year. Got hurt quickly. I think Andre Branch is a good player who – they will all tell you helps them a great deal from the Leo position against the run. Has some sack numbers. I don't know that he is the beat the offensive tackle quick off the ball guy that Chris Clemens is, or that your prototypical Leo that you expect Fowler to be. But he's been good. He's been solid. You know, and if he comes up and has the sort of season he did in 2013, improves at the end, gets some numbers, then they're probably fine at the Leo. They're not as good at the Leo as they hope to be with Fowler,
sure,
but they're probably fine there.
What about Ryan Davis? I mean, Ryan Davis in limited snaps, very productive. Sometimes when you get you know, let's say you double the snaps, doesn't mean you're going to double the productivity, right? Because you get a less of a return on your investment per snap.
He's been very good in that lightning package as an inside pass rusher, and I get fans all the time who say, we want to see more of him outside, we want to see more of him outside. And that's fine, except he is very good at that position that he plays. And as a lot of coaches will tell you, why take a guy away from something he's doing very, very well and risk him? You're going somewhere where you don't know what you're going to get out of him. I would expect him to play the same role, to be an interior pass rusher with the ability, the quickness to beat guards who aren't as athletic and quick as he is. He's been very effective there. I don't see why that would change.
John Oger here with a senior writer for Jaguars.com. John, Marquise Lee, week to week, described his status as being with the knee injury. What is your level of concern, if any? I realize the calendar says May. It's not September. It's not time to play yet. But guy who missed, you know, practice time mm-hmm. and game time last year due to a variety of I wouldn't say major injuries, but nagging stuff, sure. What have you. And here he is, another new offensive coordinator in. So new offense, you know, if this lingers, is this a concern?
Well, yeah, if it lingers, it's a concern, certainly. Less concern, certainly, than if it was Blake Bortles. I mean, that's obviously the guy you want out there to really absorb this offense, to be able to, you know, get as close as it's going to be to second nature. You need Blake out there. He needs to be learning on the fly. He needs to be seeing things. I would say I'm more concerned with Marquise being out there and continuing to get reps, working on fundamentals, working on route running with Jerry Sullivan, than I am him missing time learning the offense. I think he'll learn the offense. I think you can learn the offense in meetings. I think he'll be around. He'll be able to learn what's going on. I think he's still a young guy who needs to be further and further immersed in what Jerry's teaching and how to get open and the routes and all that. So time spent not doing that is never ideal for a young player, particularly considering he didn't do very much early off-season stuff on his own because he was in school. Not required to do that, but it's the kind of thing that a lot of players do that he hadn't been able to do, and I think he probably looked at it and said, okay, I can get that done during the off-season, during OTAs. With that not being there, a little bit of a concern, not a huge concern.
I think with Blake Bortles, and I'm sure you'll talk about this with him to some degree.
On Jaguars.com, Jaguars.com 12:15.
12:15, right. And you can catch it at Jaguars.com.
I'll be on that
on the
too.
Web. John Oger right. stars on that one. From what I'm told, he's the headliner, Tony. Hey. That's what he told me before we came out of the commercial.
I didn't say it.
So
yeah,
get that straight.
Yeah, I did say that. Actually.
Make sure Shadrick hears you. All right. A lot of talk, I think, about Blake being in better condition. You know, I never got the sense that Blake was not working hard or anything like that last year. It was just like the time crunch that you're under. You're trying to do all these different things. You're trying to work on fundamentals and footwork and all these things. And he's, you know, he got a little puffy, a little sluggish, what have you, and that he's had some time to decompress, really focus on his body, focus on his fundamentals right now. And it seems to be a theme with him every time he talks about just how good he feels both mentally and physically right now.
Yeah, and I would expect the weight thing, you know, he said, I don't think it would have been an issue unless he had brought it up.
Right.
And he's the kind of guy, very interesting, who will bring up his own flaws publicly, sort of on his own, and say, hey, I got to work on this, I got to work on this. He's a pretty confident guy. I think that's why he has leadership. I think it's why his teammates like him. Certainly yesterday in OTA's first day, I guess the best way to say it is you saw no red flags. You didn't see this guy who had said, I've worked for 2 months on these things, I'm in better shape, and he didn't walk out there, you know, looking overweight and throwing wobbly passes. So that's good. At the same time, what he's doing, what he did for 2 months, clearly is not about May, you know, 27th. It's about getting those things into his muscle memory over time so that he doesn't have to think as much about them on December 2nd or on November 24th when he's playing and he's under fire. That's when mechanics tend to go bad because you lose the muscle memory as the season goes on. So that's really, I think, what his process will be, not just this off season, but the next few off seasons is getting better and better at that. And that just takes time. And I think he'll be better than he was last year. My anticipation is that will continue to be the case as he continues to work on this.
We can't talk about specifics of what's happening on the practice field this week, and that's fine. But
I can tell you generally, Julius Thomas looks darn good.
Generally. Yeah. And I was going to ask you kind of generally, isn't this a week, you know, the first couple of days, even though you've seen these guys, you've got NFL film on these free agents. The guys that you bring in, you want to see them on the field with your own eyes. I'm always struck by something Jack Del Rio told me about his rookie class. He said, you know, as much as you vet these guys, you bring them in, occasionally you still see a guy and you're like, what were we thinking when we drafted this guy?
You don't want to be walking off the field this time of year. And Bill Polian told me this in Indianapolis many times. You don't want to walk off the field this time of year and go, oh, and he said sometimes
didn't look the same way on film.
But that's what you want out of rookie camp that just passed. You don't want to see a guy who you know doesn't belong.
Looks overwhelmed.
And, you know, none of those guys look like that. Talking to Lagerman yesterday on the field, you know, your guy, Jeff Lagerman. You know Jeff, right?
Tuesdays on Jaguars Today, all throughout the football season here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Says he likes generally what he saw from Jeremy Parnell, too. Again, it's hard to see one-on-one things because that's not going on. But just the way he handles himself, the size, the all that stuff, Lagerman was impressed with Parnell. So there's that. So, they look in a lot of spots like a better, more talented team. Julius Thomas certainly the best way to say it is sometimes you see free agents even who come in where you go, I wonder why that.
Oh, Hugh Douglas. Oh, why do we sign that guy?
Yeah. And with Julius, the way he moves, the way the ball hits his hands, very soft hands. You don't hear it hit them, which is a good sign for – he looks like a wide receiver. I mean, he – and I don't mean physically. I don't mean the girth or whatever. But the way he plays, the smoothness, impressive guy.
Yeah, and, you know, look, all you had to do is watch him play. And clearly, Peyton Manning helped elevate his numbers, I think, with the frequency and the effectiveness of the passing game. All you have to do is watch Julius Thomas play to know that he's a really good player at what he does, and that while Manning may have gotten the most possible out of him, whatever Blake is capable of getting out of Julius Thomas will be there to provide.
It's hard to imagine that even – I mean – I've said many times, I don't think he'll put up the numbers that he did in Denver immediately because the offense has a long way to go to catch up with what he's capable of. But when you watch him, there's almost no way that defenses won't have to account for him and won't have to change things to account for him. And that's the first step for an offense. You've got to start having guys like that, that even if they don't put up the numbers – defenses have to pay attention so other guys can put up numbers. All of a sudden, you have options offensively. Things start clicking a little bit. If you don't have those guys, it's hard to be functional in the NFL. It looks like the Jaguars have at least one.
Yeah, if you don't have a guy that you have to double team on and maybe more than one of those guys.
You need more than one.
Right.
But to get to two, you got to get to one first.
Correct. And you want it on both sides of the football. I think that's why you look at Dante Fowler and you say, okay, they may be okay, but – you'd hope he had a chance to be special in that regard and open things up for other guys. All right, get back out there and embargo information, okay? But think about what questions you're going to ask Blake coming up today. It's very exciting.
I'm a little nervous.
That's coming up today.
He's kind of a big star, young guy.
12:15 on Jaguars.com. Johnny O, J.P. Shadrick with the quarterback of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles.
It'll be fun. I appreciate you talking about it.
All right, Johnny. All right. There you go, buddy. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Get back out there to – information embargoed off-season training activities.
Yeah. Enjoy.
I had to think about it for a second. It's off-season training activity, right?
Yeah.
That's what I got for you for OTAs.
Organized
team activities.
It doesn't matter.
I'm not even close. Off-season training activities.
It's all the same.
I got activity, right?
It's all the same.
It's practice.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
They're practicing. They're unofficially practicing.
Correct. They're out there on the field. They're throwing the ball around. And you and I are inside.
Right. Julius Thomas is an interesting story to me because, you know, we talked a little bit last week with Cindric Marks getting in the top 100 players,
yes,
voted on by the players on NFL Network and NFL.com, and Julius Thomas has never made an appearance on that list, and his play and his numbers certainly merit him being a player that is on that type of list, and it feels like that is a direct result of the shadow of Peyton Manning over Julius Thomas. Now, I think he's done talking about it here in Jacksonville as far as, you know, did Peyton Manning make Julius Thomas? He's done talking about that. I think that there may be that chip that he carries around. I don't think he carries it around loudly, but I think he does carry that chip around of, I'm going to show everybody just how good a player I really am. And it's when I go to a different spot, like he is now in Jacksonville with Blake Bortles, and he puts up maybe not the same numbers because the odds of the Jacksonville Jaguars offense being anywhere near as prolific as what the Broncos offense has been with Peyton Manning are pretty low, but he'll put up comparable numbers. And I think then that gets him out of the shadow of Peyton Manning, and I think the other players around the league will recognize a guy like Julius Thomas here in the next year or two.
Maybe so, and I don't know if – I guess it is the players because they're the ones who vote on it, Tony,
yep.
But it seems to me that there is certainly is that effect, but I think the national media is going to continue to play a role in that because Julius Thomas will be one of the most requested interviews on the Jaguars this
sure.
year because he's got one of the biggest names of anybody in terms of accomplishment on this roster. So I think that question will continue to come up, but I think you're right. Locally, we beat it to death. You had to ask it, but now it's done and moved on. And I think Julius Thomas, he's impressed me with the way he's handled a lot of things coming in. Good to hear that.
Me too.
As Johnny O said, without giving away any state secrets, looked the part yesterday. And that's what you want to hear. All right, take a quick time out. Come back this date in football history and the Honda drive around the NFL. Top of the hour, Derek Schultz, WNDE in Indianapolis, talking Colts football with us as we take a look at the hated division rival. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you all week long by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, Tony. It was not maybe the most banner day in football history, but some notable birthdays nonetheless. Born on this date in 1972, May 27th, happy birthday, Antonio Freeman, one of Brett Favre's main targets throughout his
circus catch
career.
On Monday Night Football.
Yes, he did. Won a Super Bowl with Favre and Robert Brooks and company back in, what was that, 97, I believe, was when they took home the title?
I believe so, yeah.
Right, and then Denver beat them the next year. So it would have been...
Yeah, it would have. The Jaguars would have played them in that Super Bowl if they had beaten the Patriots.
Correct. Right, and so the Packers won that.
January, February of 97.
97,
and
correct.
Then they got beat by Denver the next year.
Born on this date in 1974. Nicknamed Danny Wonderful. Well, I believe Mike Bianchi gave him that nickname. Danny Werfel, born on this date. Not exactly the most successful pro quarterback of all time, but a good doobie. Turns 41 years old today, and not necessarily a good doobie, but a funny guy to follow on Twitter. Former Florida State Seminole Darnell Dockett, born in this date in 1981.
Now I gotta look. What's he doing now?
Is Dockett with what's he doing on Twitter now?
Yeah, I'm sure. Just
it's
in
his
the last,
birthday. He's got to be doing something.
Just in the last 2 days, there has to have been something.
34 years young for Darnell Dockett. So, like we said, banner day on this date in football history. It's presented by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. You can visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is that thrilling date in football history.
Now, the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Colin Kaepernick has not joined the long, long line of athletes who seemingly post something stupid or insensitive to social media, quickly pull it down, and then explain it in those three words, "I was hacked." Instead, Cap accepted responsibility for a post on Instagram that trivialized the floods in Houston with a picture of a couple dozen cars almost completely covered by the flooding water in the area with the caption, "I warned you, the seventh storm is coming, hashtag Houston." Again, he has pulled that photo, apologized, and deleted the post.
I give more credit for doing that, though. You
Me
know,
too.
We all say dumb things sometimes without thinking about the real human toll of some of these things that happen. And for at least for Colin Kaepernick to say, you know what, stupid thing, shouldn't have said it.
Yep.
Move on.
No, I was hacked. It's so ridiculous. Philip Rivers, who is entering the final year of his contract with the San Diego Chargers, said yesterday that there isn't anything new regarding himself and any talks of an extension with the Chargers, but he also said that he would be willing to listen to any offers the Chargers wanted to make. Rivers was at the center of trade rumors going into the draft this year because of his reported unwillingness to play in Los Angeles, where San Diego may be moving in the near future. Maybe he has softened on that stance, or maybe he just doesn't want to be a distraction as the team starts their on-field work with OTAs. Kansas City Chiefs safety Eric Berry has finished his treatment for Hodgkin lymphoma and is awaiting the results of that treatment, so that should be coming out sometime in the next couple weeks. Hopefully good news for him. And just in the last couple minutes, although it's not officially announced yet, it does appear that the Houston Texans are probably going to be getting Hard Knocks, which we've all kind of sort of known but not known for two or three weeks now.
This just in. All right, I guess we get to see J.J. Watt, whatever. I don't know. I guess you can't have Rex Ryan on it every year, but I think the Bills would have been more of a compelling camp. They didn't want to do it. Nobody really. There are not too many that ever want to do it, are there? Right? This is more of a
not really, no.
Kind of a take one for the team situation, because I think what happens is, you know, coaches and GMs hate to be put in a position where they have to be the bad guy. You know, you end up talking about guys on camera, and then you go through the process of maybe ending a guy's hopes and dreams. You know, when the Turk calls him down to the coach's office, bring your playbook. That's been some of the criticism from inside league circles to the show, that you know, you're tearing off the Band-Aid a little bit too much. I thought this was interesting, Tony. Mike Sando did an article for ESPN.com about the next wave of quarterbacks coming up for big contracts. Obviously, mm-hmm. Andrew Luck's going to get his 25 million. Andrew Luck will set the market, okay?
Yep.
And expected to be north of $25 million a year on average, okay? Russell Wilson, Cam Newton, whenever they get done, should fall probably somewhere around that $20 million mark themselves. You can argue, hey, Russell Wilson's been putting up historic numbers. Getting to the Super Bowl, is he not more valuable than Andrew Luck? But yeah, you can argue that if you want.
Surprised
to.
We haven't heard a little bit more noise on the Cam Newton front to this point, but they are where they are with that, and it'll get done eventually.
I think so. And as Sando points out, he goes, he's not a top 10 quarterback, but you're going to pay him like a top 10 quarterback, and you should pay him like a top 10 quarterback, because the alternative is start from scratch, right? I mean, so if you got a top 15 guy and you got to pay him like a top 10 guy because his contract happens to be one of the next ones that comes
sure.
up, it's kind of luck of the draw.
And he's young enough, and again, we keep talking about this, but the turnover that's coming at that quarterback position, and probably coming here in the next 4 or 5 years, where if Cam Newton stays at the level he's at,
maybe pushes him in,
but he's
top
probably going to get better, then yeah, he's going to be a top 10 guy in the league.
So anyway, half the starting quarterbacks in the league are earning at least $15 million this year, mm-hmm. okay? Tom Brady, his average comes in at $9 million, but as Sando puts it, that's really more due to creative accounting
yeah.
than it is the actual amount of money that Brady takes home. So $15 million is pretty much the barrier if you have a good to decent frontline veteran. Good to decent frontline may not be fit in the same sentence, but a good, you know, at least a guy that you feel comfortable for the next few years being the kind of the face of your
middle
quarterback
of the
position,
league or better,
right? That may be just a better way to say it than I did. From that point, you drop down to the next highest paid guys: Matt Cassel, Brian Hoyer, making $5.25 million.
Yeah.
The point being, there's no veteran middle class. Either you're good enough to start and be worthy of at least $15 million a year, or we're not paying you. You know, we're not wasting our time with that. And guys like Matt Cassel and Brian Hoyer get opportunities when you have teams that are otherwise veteran-laden and they just don't have the answer at that position, and they're not willing to start from scratch or don't have the raw material. They don't have the guy. They're not in position to draft that guy.
Right.
You've got Ryan Mallett in Houston. You've got Brian Hoyer in there now to give competition. You've got Cassel up there to – as far as I see, to take the quarterback position. I don't know if it's even to push E.J. Manuel. I'm sure they'll give he and Tyrod Taylor a shot. Why not? Why wouldn't you? It's a new coaching staff. But you're either making basically the big bucks or you're just holding the spot down. That's all it is, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing in between as far as that goes. So, and as we said, when Ryan Tannehill got his deal, I hope Blake Bortles is in position to get overpaid. You know, I hope – I hope you're debating, well, he's really only a top 15 guy. Why are we going to pay him like a top 7 quarterback? Because that happens to be when his contract comes up. I hope that's the – and trust me, you all should hope that that's the problem that this organization has, that
right.
Blake is only good enough to crack the top 15. I hope he cracks the top 3 eventually. You know, I hope he becomes the best quarterback in the league. But realistically, you get a guy who's on the cusp of the top 10, you can go – pretty damn deep if you built the rest of the roster around him.
Certainly properly. Can, yeah.
We'll talk to a guy who covers the team that is going to make Andrew Luck eventually the highest paid player in the National Football League whenever that gets done. Derek Schultz will join us coming up from WNDE in Houston. Also coming up a little bit later on, some of day one reaction to OTAs from Gus Bradley, Blake Bortles, Allen Hurns, and others talking about what's going down in the first few days of full team practice, full team with the exception of veteran Chris Clemens, at least to this point, and any of the guys who are a little bit banged up right now, Josh Evans recuperating from off-season surgery, Marquise Lee week to week with the knee injury, and a hopeful in about 50 minutes from now, Michael Bennett, Jaguar defensive tackle, sixth-round pick out of Ohio State. If practice wraps up at the appropriate time today, hope to have him in studio before we get out of here today. It is a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Yeah, it felt great. You know, get back to it day one, get day one in the books. You know, we've been looking forward as far as the receiver standpoint. You know, we've been out there running routes on air. It's the first time going against the defense. So it felt great. You know, we off to a great start. We got young guys, you know, a couple of them nicked up, but we're going to get them back rolling.
That Jaguar leading wide receiver, Allen Hurns, from 2014, Tony. I'll say this about Hurns. I think he gets kind of left out of the conversation unjustifiably by all of us to some degree, right? Because draft position, right? Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee. They're your outside guys. They were drafted to be your primary guys. Allen Hurns came in. I don't think it was flukish what he did.
No.
If he just had the one big game, you'd be like, all right, maybe it was a fluke. But, you know, he continued to show the ability to use double moves to get open down the field. Inconsistent catching the football, but definitely, I mean, could have a pretty big role on this football team this year.
No, he definitely could. I talked about this a little bit last night, you know, going through some of his comments, but, you know, Allen Hurns was a guy I ignored throughout much of the offseason last year. I've talked about the story of him catching that bomb in the rookie minicamp and me going, eh, it's Allen Hurns.
Right.
You know, what's his chance of even making this team? Who cares? Like, I just completely ignored it, right? And look, if he never played another down for the Jacksonville Jaguars, which obviously isn't going to be the case, but if he could never play football again forever, he's the guy who led the team in receiving yards and receptions in 2014. He will always be the guy who did that.
As an undrafted rookie.
Right, which is really impressive. And maybe it's because of circumstances, because some other guys got hurt and it created opportunities for him, whatever. I mean, from the time that we got to preseason football last year, it was like, this guy's pretty good.
Hey, you know what? Created opportunities for Kerry Taylor.
Right.
Created opportunities for a bunch of guys who were out there on the practice field. Hurns rose above all of them.
I can still remember, like, I can remember in that first preseason game last year, that little in route that he ran and that diving ball going to the ground. That was a great throw by Blake, but it was a ball that he had to go to the ground in between two defenders and made that catch going to the ground. And I was like, you know, we haven't seen that from even Mike Brown, from Kerry Taylor, from these other guys. We're seeing it from Allen Hurns, who was obviously a really good wide receiver while he was at the University of Miami, too, maybe held back a little bit by the accomplishments of that university, not so much his own talent, and took advantage of every opportunity he was given last year. And
well,
certainly, we'll see what happens with that slot position. Like, they draft Rashad Green, but that doesn't mean Rashad Green's the slot. It means that there's competition for who's going to be the third wide receiver on this team. That's what it means to me. Not that Allen Hurns is out. It's that there's competition now to get on the field.
I would
spot.
Agree with you. And right now, if I'm going to bet on anybody, I'm going to bet on the guy who's got a year of NFL experience under
me
his
too.
Belt. And we'll see what that translates to. Let's go up to Indianapolis. Hated Indianapolis. unless you're covering a Super Bowl. There's no finer city to do it in. But most of you aren't going to be doing that anytime soon. Derek Schultz from WNDE in Indianapolis joining us here on Jaguars Today this morning. Good morning, Derek. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, guys. I'm great.
Hey, we were just talking a few minutes ago about the changing landscape of quarterback contracts. And when Andrew Luck ultimately gets his new deal, he'll set the new bar as the highest paid player in the National Football League. He's got the fourth year of his rookie deal is upcoming here in 2015. Obviously, they picked up the fifth year option. Is this a case they feel like, you know what, it's going to get done eventually. There's no timetable. Whether it gets done before next season is fine, but they've stretched Peyton Manning out before. They let him play out his contract. What do you see as a timetable for Andrew Luck to get extended?
I still think that this is going to happen before the season starts, but I wouldn't be shocked if it didn't. I'm not really sure what the holdup is. I think the Colts are confident that they're going to be able to sign him, and Luck wants to stay here, at least from everything that he's said. So I don't think that him walking out the door after next year is any kind of a reality, that very, very slim chance of that happening. But there's still some talks that this could potentially get done before the season starts. And if it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I think really this question, if you ask me 6 months from now, people will be much more tenuous about it here in Indianapolis than they are right now. Most people are confident that this is still going to get done.
Derek, this is a Colts team that has obviously been good enough to win the AFC South for the last handful of years, and that's in part an indictment on the other three teams in the AFC South for the last couple of years.
Sure.
But Andrew Luck has elevated this roster. Do you feel like with the things that they've done in this offseason, they bring in Andre Johnson, Frank Gore, whatever they did in free agency outside of that, plus the draft, have they done enough to catch the perceived big boys in the AFC, the New England Patriots, the Denver Broncos? Have they caught up to those two teams in the conference?
Well, I think they've caught up and passed Denver. I think New England is the one that you always worry about. That's the hurdle that they seem to not be able to cross. They've played the Patriots every year, whether it be in the regular season or postseason or both, since 2009, yet they haven't beaten them since 2009. That's the last time. Manning hitting Wayne in the end zone with about 30 seconds left in that huge comeback on Sunday Night Football. That's the last time that the Colts ended up beating New England. So New England's had their number, and not only have they had their number, they've blown their doors off the last couple of games that they've played, including both of the last two playoff seasons. So I do think that that is the million-dollar question, because, and this isn't a knock on Jacksonville or Tennessee or Houston, but you just said it. You're good enough to beat up on the division. The Colts went undefeated in the division the last 2 years. They went 4-2 in Luck's first year. I mean, that's beating up. That's 16-2 against those three teams over the last 3 years, and that goes a lot into Chuck Pagano's overall record. And there's a question of how good are the Colts really? Are the Colts an actual 11-win team these last couple of years, or are the Colts just a 8- or 9-win team that has gotten fat playing bad competition? And people are ready for them to take the next step. They've taken the next step the last 3 years. Luck's first year, they get into the playoffs, which nobody expected. Luck's second year, they get into the playoffs, they win a game, they win the division. Third year, they win the division, get into the playoffs, get to the AFC Championship game. So naturally, the progression and the expectation is that they're going to get there. But guys, I'm still worried about them defensively. That's great that they added Andre Johnson and Frank Gore, and they used their first-round pick on Philip Dorsett out of Miami, but none of those guys helped them stop the Patriots from running for 400 yards in the postseason in Foxborough.
How shocking was that first-round pick of Dorsett up in Indy?
People were really surprised, because I think most people thought that if they did go offense, they were going to go offensive line. And let's face it, Pagano and Gregson will tell you the same thing. The Dorsett pick was a luxury pick. The Colts are pretty set at wide receiver as it is. They have T.Y. Hilton, who is an emerging number one. They have Andre Johnson, who everybody's fully convinced, as long as he's healthy, he could certainly be a great number two, maybe even a 900-1,000-yard guy on the high end of expectation. They bring in Duron Carter, who's had some off-field issues, but he's Chris Carter's son, and he has all the potential in the world, and they tried to buy low on him. And they return Dante Moncrief, who had a really promising rookie season. Plus, guys, they're stacked at tight end. They have Dwayne Allen. They have Kobe Fleener, who would be starters on a lot of teams. Jack Doyle filling out that depth chart. So they have three tight ends. They have Boom Heron and Frank Gore, who can catch the ball out of the backfield. They roll four deep with the wide receivers. That's why the pick was so surprising. I do think, and this is something to keep an eye on, Dorsett is basically projected to be a T.Y. Hilton clone. T.Y. Hilton's contract comes up after this season. So maybe the Colts use that pick as a contingency plan, because obviously Hilton's going to want to get paid. Look at his numbers. He's going to want to get paid like a number one receiver.
How much did the Colts miss Robert Mathis last year? I know he doesn't help necessarily stopping the run game of the New England Patriots, but just in general, especially after the season he had 2 years ago.
Yeah, you're always going to miss a guy that was right there for AFC Defensive Player of the Year when he was healthy the prior year. He had a monster, 19 and a half sacks. When you subtract that, you're going to miss somebody like that. I actually think, guys, that surprisingly, their pass rush was somewhat adequate last year. You thought to yourself, geez, what are they going to do without Mathis? Because he was their pass rush in 2013. But last year, Eric Walden stepped up and had a pretty nice season. Jonathan Newsom was a fifth-round rookie out of Ball State who came out of nowhere and locked down one of those outside linebacker spots by the end of the year. So we saw some progress and some positive momentum for pass rush. Defensively, overall, you'd like to have Mathis back, but there's a lot of question as to how effective he's going to be. He's not getting any younger. He's 33 years old. He's coming off a blown Achilles. And Jim Irsay alluded to the fact a couple of weeks ago that maybe the worst-case scenario for Mathis would be that he'd miss the first six games of the season. So this blown Achilles is not progressing as much as they would like, and there's still some doubt that he could be available week one in Buffalo.
Derek Schultz here with us, covers the Colts for WNDE in Indianapolis on Twitter, at Schultz1260. Derek, from our vantage point, you got a bunch of rich people problems up there in Indianapolis, right? Down here, right, I mean, seriously, the questions we get, how many games does Gus Bradley need to win? Six, seven, to, you know, keep the heat off his job security. Meanwhile, up there, Chuck Pagano is coaching at the moment as a lame duck for 2015. Is there a mandate, Super Bowl or bust, for Pagano to continue on as the coach of the Colts?
I don't think it's Super Bowl or bust. I think that the Colts, if they had, let's say just hypothetically, they won the division again and they got back to the, let's just say, divisional round. So they got to the final, what, four? The final eight, I should say. My math skills aren't great. They got to the final eight and the final four of the AFC. Depending on how it all shook out, I think Chuck Pagano would be back. There'd be no reason for him to be gone. He's done a nice job. I think Pagano is in a very similar boat. I know that you guys aren't an NBA market, but what Frank Vogel is to the Pacers, in that I think people are convinced that Pagano, and like Vogel, is a good coach. I don't think people know if he's a great coach, and that's what they want to see from him. And this has just as much to do with the Colts playing wait and see as it does with Pagano playing wait and see, because from what I've heard, there's been some flexibility wanted by Pagano where he kind of wants to see where it goes this year before he decides to commit and move on and sign an extension, because he's thinking to himself, well, geez, if the Colts, let's say that they won the Super Bowl, something like that, then he could really cash in as opposed to whatever he would get as an extension before this season starts. So this is a little bit of both parties playing that same kind of wait and see game.
You know, it's interesting. We've talked about all the skill positions on the offensive side of the ball for the Colts, and look, you said it. It's a luxury pick for them to go get a guy like Philip Dorsett coming out of Miami as their potentially fourth wide receiver in that offense. The two tight ends, Frank Gore coming in, Andre Johnson coming in. Obviously, Andrew Luck is an exceptional quarterback. The offensive line seems to have been part of the story for Indianapolis for the last several years. They've been able to overcome it because of how great Andrew Luck has been. Is there some surprise that they're not doing more to address that offensive line here in the last couple of years?
You know, honestly, I think the line has been somewhat over-criticized, and it was criticized very often, and rightfully so, early on in Luck's career, especially in 12 and 13, his first 2 years, because he was a pinata back there. But a lot of that had to do with injuries. They've never been healthy. When the injury bug bites the Colts, it's always along the offensive line. But they feel like they've shored things up. They've got Anthony Costanzo, who's due a hefty extension here coming up, their former first-round pick, who has really held down that left tackle spot and remained healthy. Goster Cherlis has been banged up. He was a big free agent prize in 2013 on the right spot. They're confident he's going to be ready to go for training camp and for week one. And the interior of the line is where it's been a big problem, but they feel like they've addressed that with Jack Muhort, who was last year's second-round pick, who locked down a starting spot at left guard. At right guard, they went out and got Todd Herrmanns, who had played at Philly. He was a veteran guy, not flashy, but he gets the job done. He could also start four offensive line positions, which it's great to have that kind of versatility. They brought back Joe Wrights, who was kind of their Swiss Army knife as a backup on the offensive line. And then at the center position, they tried out a couple of guys, including Khalid Holmes and Jonathan Harrison, with mixed results. I think really the weak link of the offensive line is the center position. But when this group, guys, was healthy last year at the end of the year, and they strung together four, five, six games of the same guys at each spot, I think you saw this line actually play fairly well, and that continuity is so important. You can have the best players in the world up on the offensive line, but if you're switching in guys in and out week after week, and this guy's got a hamstring, and this guy's got a knee, and this guy's got a concussion, and there's just a revolving door at tackle, at guard, at center, then you're never going to get that continuity, and the play is really going to suffer. So I think as long as they stay healthy, which is a big if given their track record, that offensive line is not going to be mistaken for the best one in the league or anywhere close to the top five or seven, but it's going to be just fine.
All right, final thought for you here. Derek Schultz here with us, WNDE in Indianapolis. So who's the breakout player for this team this year, offense or defense? Who's the guy that's going to open a lot of eyes in 2015?
I think you're going to see a lot more from Kobe Fleener emerging as one of the league's best tight ends. We're starting to see him put it together. If you went into a lab and you said to yourself, okay, I'm going to create the perfect tight end, at least physically, it would look like Kobe Fleener. He's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he's smart, he's versatile. And the problem for him has always been the consistency. He'll have these games where he'll have six catches for 80 yards and a touchdown, and the next week he has three drops, one catch for 4 yards, and he's a complete non-factor, and Dwayne Allen gets a lot of the offensive snaps. So while he might not ever be a great fantasy option because the Colts are very much committed to rotating in Allen as well and making that sort of a 60-40 split, with Fleener being the starter but Allen getting a lot of time, I think you're going to see Fleener eventually emerge into becoming one of the league's top tight ends. I'm really, really confident in that, especially with a quarterback like Andrew Luck and the rapport that they've had for not just the 4 years, going on 4 years of their NFL careers, but also going back to their days at Stanford together.
All right. He is Derek Schultz, and he covers the Colts for WNDE in Indianapolis. We can't wait till we talk to you next year when we ask you how shocked you were that the Jaguars ran roughshod over the AFC South. That's a conversation for a year from now. Derek, always appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, Mike. Anytime.
All right, there he goes. Derek Schultz, WNDE, at Schultz1260 on Twitter. He's the Afternoon Drive host with Jay Query up in Indianapolis talking Colts football on a daily basis up there. All right, when we return, we'll take a look at some early returns on the fan feedback question of the day with the Tom Bush family of dealerships asking you, are you worked up about Chris Clemens not being here for OTAs? Does it bother you that he's not here? Or do you say, hey, come see, come saw. It's not mandatory. Why should I get bothered by that? And hopefully in about 25 minutes or so, looking to score a conversation with Michael Bennett, Jaguar rookie out of Ohio State on the defensive line, ready for action in OTAs. We'll get that coming your way as well on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Luck looking to the right. He's going to get hit and brought down yet again by Chris Clements. Chris Clements is a man possessed today. Sacks him back at the 46-yard line.
Frank Frangie on the call, Jaguar Radio Network. Flagship station being 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Chris Clements got his 8 last year. What can he do for an encore? Not at OTAs. That is in keeping with the way he has gone about his business in recent years in the National Football League as well. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up here momentarily. Couple on the text line. You can always text us or call us for that matter. It's 641-1010. But the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, I'd mentioned in passing Matt Cassel, and I thought ultimately would be the starting option, although EJ Manuel and Tyrod Taylor will get their chances in Buffalo. Mike texts in, EJ Manuel and Tyrod Taylor splitting reps with the first team offense, Cassel running the other side of the field with lesser players. Well, that's not what the Buffalo News tells me. Buffalo News says Cassel and E.J. Manuel are splitting reps with the first team, and Tyrod Taylor and Jeff Toole are relegated to backup duty. So I guess I'll go by the Buffalo News for now.
Actually, I just read, Mike, that Rex Ryan is doing a rotation throughout all of OTA, so all three of the quarterbacks, Tyrod Taylor, E.J. Manuel, and Cassel, are all getting a fair shot at first team reps.
At which they said, why wouldn't you give him a fair shot if you come in?
Sure.
I mean, Tyrod Taylor's a good college quarterback, right? I mean, who knows? They're not beholden to E.J. Manuel. They didn't select him 16th overall in Buffalo. So if they can get the job done, they're going to go with the guy who gives them the best chance to win. There's no politics involved in the decision. At least there shouldn't be now that the regime that ushered in E.J. Manuel has been pretty much ushered out. Let's see. Also on the text line, Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, to me, it would be a negative, talking about Chris Clemens here, if Coach Gus wouldn't have said that Chris was in contact with the organization. I believe he's just soaking up the rest of his off time. That's from Frank and Callahan. Perhaps I don't think it's just a question with Chris Clemens, like, oh, man, I was just trying to avoid practice. I mean, again, he's come in. He's been a very productive player in his career, in his late 20s, even into his early to now creeping up on those mid-30s.
Sure.
And, Tony, I don't get the sense he's just like, oh, man, I was going to loaf through this. I mean, obviously he's coming in prepared. He's been in shape. Nobody's questioned that once he's gotten here. I think coaches just want to run everything. They want every detail the way they want it, and that means full attendance, full participation. I mean, you want the sense that so many military analogies, and we all realize football's not nearly anywhere close to the importance of what the folks in the military do on a daily basis. No. But in terms of that team bonding, there's a lot of similarities to that, right? Just to be together in adverse conditions, camps, whether it's training camp or anything else, can bring guys together. How much is that important when Chris Clemens goes out there and you tell him, seek and destroy the quarterback? I couldn't tell you. You know,
right.
Coaches will probably even vary on how much that's important if they were being honest with you. But today, Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asked you, are you bothered by it? You can look at some of the responses here, Tony, but I think overwhelmingly most people said no.
No, they really did. Robbie said, not at all. It's voluntary. I would be more concerned if the rookies or second-year guys weren't there. From Daniel, not at all. This is a typical part of his off-season process. From Irish Jaguar, a bit. But it's all moot so long as he comes back in shape anyway. I do wonder if he would have skipped them if Dante hadn't been injured, though. From Isaiah, not really, but would be nice if he showed. From Brian, no, because Branch, Smith, etc. need all the reps they can get. Creates opportunities for others. From Brian, nope. If he doesn't show week one versus Carolina, then I'll care. From Nick, no, he's a veteran who leads by his play, not his words. He's always done this. Hashtag not that big of a deal. From Cristiano, a guy who might have lost his position had Fowler not torn his ACL, not much. From Joey, Clem can get 6 sacks without going to OTAs. He'll be ready. Hashtag getting old sucks. From Hardy Bros, no, everyone knows their own body and what it takes for them to get ready. Hashtag no leader. And from Grant, there you go. That's all.
See, I'm a different guy. I would look at it more out of a sense of desperation. Like, I'm the kind of guy, no matter where you are in life, I try not to be too comfortable. You know, you always feel like you can be replaced, because typically in life you can
sure
be replaced. And I'll say this about Chris Clemens. It's his money. It's his career. It's his right not to be here. It's voluntary. We're not trying to go overboard on this, but you're the one you're basically gambling the $4 million in compensation. Because if the Jags decide that you didn't show enough, right, and you're missing some of the opportunities to show that you are still the top of the depth chart guy that you were last year at that position, good luck getting $4 million as a 33, soon to be 34-year-old pass rusher on
right.
the open market.
Right.
That's all. But hey, that's his prerogative, man. I'm not, you know, knocking him. If he's been smart with his money, he's probably got more money that he'll ever need to last a lifetime. But still, that's nothing to sneeze at. I'd be like, man, get me to that opening day roster, Tony. Because once I'm in, I get it locked in as
right.
a vested veteran as far as that goes. Couple on Facebook, mostly not worried about it. Some of course nots, let the man do what he wants as long as it doesn't negatively affect his performance. Well, how do you know? Even if he shows up and let's say he has a bad year, he's getting older. Doesn't mean it had anything to do with OTAs.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
One way or the other. Billy Winnestorfer, I hope I pronounced that right, Billy, said yes and no. If he wasn't the only one, it would be more tolerable for him since he never really attends them. But since he's the only one, it's like, come on, man, show the team you're part of it. Hashtag Jaguars today. Again, that's not his role or something that or requirement for him to show them he's a part of it. You sign me. You know what I'm about. Here's a CBA. I don't need to be there. I don't think it's any kind of big deal. The only reason we even asked it today is because Gus, I was a little surprised that Gus kind of made a deal out of it yesterday. Didn't make it a federal case or anything. And I definitely think he was more ticked off last year when he didn't know that Clemens wasn't going to be here. And I felt like probably felt a little bit blindsided coming into the situation. But nevertheless, Gus Bradley yesterday talking with media after practice. We can't talk about what goes on during practice, but we could talk about what Gus talks about going on during practice. And he talked about how the offense looked after the first day of OTAs.
You know, I was real curious to see the offense. New system, had a couple phases where they've worked on, but never all together versus the defense. For them to come out and execute like they did, I thought it was pretty good. Something definitely to build on.
All right, well, good execution, but he almost got through an entire answer without telling you what he thought about it. know, he basically said, I was curious to see, and then didn't tell, and, oh, but they executed well. And that's about what you're going to get right now. I mean, if you're going to get just a general feeling of positivity or a general feeling of, hey, we didn't have a great day. It is May, after all.
Right.
All this is overcomable.
No, it really is, but we talked about it a little bit yesterday, Mike, how look, for a lot of teams, maybe this time of year isn't a big deal because you're in a system that you've been in for 4 or 5 years. You're very comfortable with what you're doing out there, just kind of going through the motions, getting back into football shape a little bit. For the Jaguars, it is a new offense, and yesterday was the first day they're on the field with that new offense with everybody out there together, so it makes it a little more critical for them in May than it would for a lot of teams around the National Football League.
And with a coaching staff that's won 7 games.
Right.
In 2 years since they've been here.
The pressure is ratcheting. Gus Bradley went on to talk about Marquise Lee, who was not out there yesterday, and that knee injury we found out about yesterday.
Marquise Lee banged up his knee a little bit in phase two, I think, right in the middle of phase two. So, you know, he's more day-to-day or probably more week-to-week. We're going to be smart with him and where he's at. I know he wants to get back here, but we're just, you know, we're being smart with him.
That's really all you can say until you see him out there, and we know that he's cleared to go. And it's more concerning because of the nagging injuries that Marquise Lee suffered through last year, and the practice time and the game time that it kept him from. And it really, you know, as we keep referencing, you know, Jerry Sullivan talking about this a week or so ago, set him back. Marquise Lee said it set him back as well. And, you know, you come in, you're going to feel better in year two, but like you said, Tony, brand new offense, going to be some new terminology, new, you know, responsibilities. So, again, it's May. Nobody's freaking out on the first couple days or first week of OTAs, but keep an eye on this to see that it doesn't linger too long. Gus also talked about what he'd like to see out of the veteran defensive players.
You know, I think both sides, you're kind of establishing the tempo or more of a mindset of how we want to be defensively, creating a standard. A lot of these guys have been around here for a couple of years now, so, you know, I really would like to see them create the standard now, you know, where they show ownership.
Is that, I mean, that, I guess that ties in, right, with Chris Clemens, but Gus, they had to know who they're getting when they got him, and I get that you want that. You want guys to be here as much as possible. You want your quarterback to be the face of the franchise and the kind of guy who's going to organize his own workouts with his receivers and take those steps above and beyond. And that's probably, for the most part, what it takes to succeed at a high level in anything, going above and beyond. Again, one guy who's a defensive end, your job's to go get the quarterback, not as critical. If this were a quarterback, I don't know if we'd be saying the same things, even though it would be Blake Bortles' prerogative, being that it's a voluntary workout to not show up. You feel like you do your vetting of that guy in the draft process. You're not looking to draft that guy at the quarterback position, obviously. A guy who's going to be that kind of hands-off type situation.
No, and it is different with it being Clemens and a guy on the defensive side of the ball. And speaking to the defense in general and what Bradley's talking about there and setting a standard, I saw an article a couple days ago from Football Outsiders talking about the weakness of each team left in the AFC South, the perceived weakness of each team. And for the Jaguars, they listed pass rush. And it's a conversation that we've been having all offseason, why I thought they were going defensive end from the time that we got done with the season there at number 3 until we actually got to the draft. And it was because of these kind of metrics numbers that if you just look at the raw numbers of what the Jaguars did getting after the passer, they were pretty good. They were 6th in the league in sacks. When you go inside those numbers, I think what they figured out was they graded 12 of those 46 sacks that the Jaguars had as coverage sacks, where they flooded zones in coverage. So, and that speaks to the talent that you have on the back end of your defense and how much better it's getting back there. But it also says that you needed that to get home. And what the reason that they would want to bring in a guy like Dante Fowler was to bring in somebody that we don't need that. We got a guy that can create that kind of damage. Your best pass rusher shouldn't be your defensive tackle. And that's the Jaguars, the position they may once again find themselves in going into 2015, where I thought that bringing in Clemens and bringing in Red Bryant last year was going to help a guy like Sendarek Marks. It did. But going into 2015 now, what are they on that defensive side of the ball? And while I think the coverage is still going to be about as good or maybe even a little bit better than it was last year, these things tend to average themselves out in the National Football League. So you're probably not going to see as much in the way of coverage sacks as you have last year. And so that number's probably going to come down a little bit.
I agree with you that you have to have guys that create one-on-one nightmares for the opposing coordinator to game plan for. But I bet if you looked at New England and Seattle, the two Super Bowl teams last year, look at those secondaries. I'd like to see how many coverage sacks those teams ended up with as a percentage, because I would imagine there's quite a few, right, when you got Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas and those guys roaming around back there, that even though there's talent up front with guys like Michael Bennett and Bruce Irvin and Cliff Averill, it's you get that extra second to half second, whatever it is, to get home to the quarterback, going to have a lot more success. It really is, like every sport, just a matter of degree and inches and milliseconds.
And you wonder how much with teams like Seattle and New England, for instance, how much, because you don't want to get behind the eight ball against them, you speed up what you're doing on offense, you run the quick screen game, you don't keep the ball in the quarterback's hands very long, you try to get some quick things going. And against Jacksonville, because you're not scared of the pass rush, do you sit back there and try to make plays downfield, right? And I do think there's a different mentality when you're playing some of the great defenses in the league as opposed to playing Jacksonville.
All right, we got to take a timeout, and we're hopeful to catch up with Michael Bennett, Jaguars' sixth-round rookie out of Ohio State University. A lot of people thought he was one of the top steals in the NFL draft, and practice is wrapping up as scheduled. Should have a few minutes with him before the show is out today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. We continue on Jaguars Today, live from EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Metro Rooter Wednesday. We continue along here, Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Fresh off the practice field. I don't know how fresh he is, Tony, honestly. Michael Bennett here with us. I feel like there's some thievery going on. Every time I hear Mike's name, it's steal of the draft, Michael Bennett by the Jacksonville Jaguars. How are you, man?
I'm really good. Yeah, like you said, fresh out of practice, but not quite fresh. but I'm happy to be here.
You know, it's amazing to us. We watch how well you played for the national champion Ohio State Buckeyes, the Ohio State University. Congrats on that. But were you shocked? I mean, it's sixth round. People are like, Kuiper had you as the best player on the board for like 2.5 rounds, man. I mean, were you watching this wondering what is going on?
Yeah, I mean, one, I've never been through the process, and so I didn't really know what to expect. I knew you can drop farther than you're expected to. But, I mean, once the fifth round hit, I was just more confused than anything else, because they said absolute lowest you're going to go is fourth. So you just have to really not get caught up on that and look at the big picture and be like, well, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is the best choice for me. So don't worry about the initial, because the draft, all that's about is the initial money that you start with. It's not about your ability or anything like that. So that's how I see it, is I don't start off with as much money as some other guys.
That's a good way to look at it.
Absolutely.
More than we do, though, Tony.
Right, right. How do you feel about the fit with Jacksonville? You kind of mentioned it there that eventually you do wind up here in Jacksonville in the sixth round. How do you feel like you fit in with this defense and what they want to do with you?
I think it's a perfect fit for me. I think this is, you know, the kind of defense that I'm built for, my body's built for, my mentality is for, and they know how to use me. So I think that they have me scheme-fitted as a three technique, but I also know that as a young guy, you have more of a chance getting on the field if you can play different positions. So I'm trying to show that, you know, I know these different positions. I can play them, and, you know, wherever you want to put me, I'm going to produce for you. So I got great guys to look up to, like Ziggy and Sendarek and Tyson and other older guys like that, and Jared now, who I can watch what they're doing and learn from them while also getting reps.
It is probably the deepest position group on the team, or the front four as a whole. Obviously, you lose a would-be teammate for this year in Dante Fowler Jr. As a rookie coming in, man, you see that happen to a guy that he's in your draft class with you. What's going through your mind when that goes down?
Well, I just got to know Dante, and, you know, he's a great guy. I was really excited to be able to play with him and hopefully, you know, have a career playing next to the guy. So it was rough to watch someone with that much potential get an injury like that before they even got a chance to prove themselves. So, but once again, you got to look at the big picture and be like, well, this is just a little setback. He can use all the positives that he can get out of it and then be better than ever next year.
Want to be clear, was it a hamstring injury, and how is it feeling now?
Yeah, it was a hamstring injury that I had at my pro day that just was nagging. And it feels great now. They've been slowly getting me back into practice. Today I did, I don't know, maybe like 10, 12 team reps. And I felt no tweak, no nothing, no soreness, tightness, nothing in my hamstring. So I'm going to expect that tomorrow or next week I'm going to be full go, you know, and have no problems with it.
Michael Bennett of your Jacksonville Jaguars here with us, as we mentioned, win the championship with the Buckeyes. Man, just tell us what it was like. Tell us what it was like playing for Urban Meyer. You know, they loved him when he was in Gainesville. Not so much anymore, you know. Yeah. But just to go through that whole experience, I mean, you guys were seen as a team that just got in, and then you dominated the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, it was an honor to play for Coach Meyer. Just the way he goes about his business, the way he you know, runs the program is it's greatness. And everybody that he recruits, everybody he brings in, he expects greatness out of you, and he'll pull it out of you. No matter how uncomfortable it is, he's going to get the best out of you. So I thank him for that. But it was just that whole ride, that whole watching how we progressed each game, because if you saw us in the first two or three games, we were legitimately a bad team. But every single game and every single practice, you could visibly see guys get better and improve and learn new things, until by the end of the season, like you said, we were just rolling through people, because that's just, I don't know, that's the progress that we made, and we continue to progress.
Who should be quarterback for the Buckeyes this year?
I think if Braxton's healthy, he's still the quarterback. We don't replace people because they got hurt.
See, I like that. He didn't dance around that at all, man. That's pretty – he just come right out. That's our guy. I like that, man. The question here – there is no question here. Have you gotten to spend any time at all around Blake, and just what's your impression of him?
Only in practice. He just – I haven't really hung out with him outside. Defensive line doesn't interact with the quarterback too much.
Keep those walls up.
Yeah. No, but he seems like just a really good guy, someone who's really disciplined and determined. So he's got complete control of the offense. So I'm excited to see, you know, what he does on Sundays and Mondays.
Make
and
your job easier, man.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Score a bunch of points and
keep
you know,
off the field.
Exactly.
Have you had a chance to relax a little bit yet? Get to know the city?
I don't have a car, so I haven't got to know the city at all. But as soon as I get a car, I'm going to go see the city. But I'm trying not to relax. As soon as you know, get comfortable, bad stuff starts happening. So, but that doesn't mean it's not fun. It doesn't mean it's not enjoyable. Just you got to always be studying when you're in the hotel, and studying when you're here, and trying to eat healthy and stuff like that. So it's a full-time job now.
At Mike63Bennett, still that's up to date on the Twitter handle,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I guarantee you there are thousands of Jaguar Today listeners who would like to volunteer to be your chauffeur until you get that vehicle. Tell us about your impressions of Gus Bradley. Was there a connection with the Jags during the process leading up to the draft? Did you know they had interest in you? And, you know, what is the, you know, just being around him, you compare him to some of the other coaches that you played for?
Well, my only team visit was to the Jaguars, and I loved it when I came here. I thought the facilities were incredible. I liked the coaching staff. I didn't get to meet the guys, but I really liked what I saw. I love their philosophy. I'm very happy to be here. And then Coach Bradley, I really like his philosophy of, rather than looking at let's go win the Super Bowl this year, it's let's get better today. Let's get better on this rep, improve, because that's just how you get things done. And the big goals will come if you can get better each and every day. And he's always got a positive attitude, always talking about overcoming adversity. And he just seems like the kind of guy you want to play for.
Even though the money may not be as big initially, is there something that you want? Is there something you've always looked forward to doing, whether it's buying a house for somebody in your family, or just is there a purchase or anything like that that you want to make? Or are you a sensible guy who's going to be driving a Toyota Camry for the next 8 years?
I've been fortunate that my family has done well for themselves, so I don't have to buy them a house or anything like that. But I'm not a guy that spends money. So I'll probably get a nice enough car, like leased or something. But past that, I'm going to live in the hotel they've got for us for as long as I can.
Smart guy, man. Smart guy. Put it on their dime if you possibly can.
I know it's a really general question, Mike, but why football?
It's a goofy answer, but I can't see myself doing anything else just because of the mentality that it takes to be a football player. You have to love the physicality of it. You have to love the grittiness of lining up next to or across from somebody and them thinking they're just going to dominate you on that play, and you have to beat them and let them know that you're the alpha male or whatever. That's what I love about football, and I don't know too many other jobs other than the UFC that you can get that kind of just adrenaline rush and testosterone rush that you get in football. So I don't know how to replace that. So I play football, and I love it every second.
Would you do UFC?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've been hitting the head too many times already.
That's enough. And those guys, man, they can't fight every week, man. They're taking too many face shots. At least you get to line up 16 yeah. times and go chase the dream.
And I don't want to get knocked out. So
there's that as well. We got a text in from somebody who says he lives in Jacksonville now. He's from Ohio, and he played high school ball with you. I don't know who that is, but they agree that you're a beast, and the Jags got a steal in the draft. So we certainly hope that's the case, man. We know nobody wants to be the steal of the draft. They want to be, you know, the first overall pick in the draft, man. But I think you got a wonderful attitude about it. Doesn't matter now. Go out there and play and earn exactly. your playing time and go fit in. Michael, we appreciate it, man. You like Michael or Mike? Does it matter to you?
It doesn't. It All doesn't. Right. Whatever's comfortable
Rook.
For you.
How about Rook?
Hey. Call
you
Rook. That works.
Michael Bennett, man, many long, successful careers here in Jacksonville, or years here in Jacksonville. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. Michael Bennett, sixth-round pick of the Jags. Maybe he will be the steal of the draft. Tony, let's certainly hope that's the case, or one of them. It seemed like a draft where all the national pundits were saying they might have got a handful of steals in terms at least of expected draft position with these guys. So,
yeah,
good attitude. Come on in and championship pedigree. And
apparently they educate him up there at Ohio State too.
It didn't seem like a dumb guy.
No.
I would like to add as well. Very impressive individual, Michael Bennett. Glad we could bring him to you here. And thanks to the folks, particularly Alex Brooks with the Jaguars PR staff for helping to make that happen today. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs, in-home, for your business, industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it. Metro Rooter's got the solution with same-day service, weekends included, the right people with the right equipment. They've been serving Jacksonville since 1978. If you've got plumbing issues, they'll serve you very well. They've done it for me in my house. I trust them. Couldn't give you a better endorsement than that. MetroRooter.com. Call 695-1911. That's 695-1911 for Metro Rooter. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by today. He'll be back in with me tomorrow morning. Derek yep. Schultz from WNDE in Indianapolis talking Colts football tomorrow. I'll talk with Jim Wyatt of the Tennessean. Take a look at the Titans, the last team as we go through the AFC South this week, and maybe another Jaguar player fresh off the field. So thanks to Michael Bennett for stopping by. Fat Tony's got the day off tomorrow.
I do.
That's a rarity.
I'm trying to get this arm fixed.
I know. I know you're jealous, man. I've been out there playing golf, and I got the new clubs, and you have to hear about all my war stories.
I haven't played this calendar year.
I know.
I haven't been out on a golf course this year.
I know. Get that thing taken care of, man, and we'll talk to you on Friday. So that does it for us, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, and for Fat Tony and all of our guests today. I'm Mike Dempsey. XL Primetime coming up. Don't forget Jaguars.com live today with Blake Bortles at 12:15. This is 1010 XL 92.5 FM.